The Spectator magazine is home to wonderful writing, insightful analysis, and unrivalled books and arts reviews. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, along with a free £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to the special Saturday edition of Coffee House Shots. I'm James Heal. I'm joined today by the editor of The Spectator, Michael Gove, our assistant content editor, William Atkinson, and commissioning editor, Laura Brown. And the subject we're debating on this special extended edition of Coffee House Shots today is the future of the Conservative leadership. William Atkinson has been very staunch in his belief that Kemi Badenoch should go. Our editor, Michael Gove, will argue against that and that the Tories should give her more time. And then we've got Laura performing the role of floating voter or juror, as you were, in this trial. So I'm going to start off with you, William. Why do you think Kemi Badenoch should now go as Tory leader?
Well, because 6 months ago when she became the leader, I didn't think she was up to the job. And the 6 months that she has been leader of the Conservative Party, she has proved very amply that she isn't up to the job. The Conservative Party is currently facing an existential crisis. Mm. 300 years of Toryism after the local elections a couple of weeks ago seem to about to be drawing to a close. If the party is losing councils like Kent and Staffordshire in one fell swoop to Reform and the Lib Dems, what's going to happen next year when you have elections in Essex, Suffolk, Hampshire, Norfolk and beyond? Previously, staunchly blue Tory areas, which I could see going en masse to Reform. And then also you repeat that at the elections in Wales and Scotland as well. And you will see the Conservative Party wiped out, I think, all in one go as a political force across the country. Obviously, as somebody who's been a member of the Conservative Party since the age of 15, this is something I very much don't want to happen. And I think the only way in which any recovery is going to be possible is going to have to require Kemi Badenoch going, for the simple reason that she inherited a very bad situation after the general election, but she at least inherited a situation where the Conservative Party was ahead in the polls and where it was leading Reform by 6 or 7 points. And after 6 months of her being leader, the last six polls that have come out this week have put the party an average of 12 points behind Reform. And in this case, the buck has to stop with Kemi. These are people who continue to support the Conservative Party and didn't go to Reform when you still had the record that the party did from government, with the Boris wave, with the failure to stop the boat and Rishi Sunak's rather incompetent election campaign. Yet they have departed the party under Kemi Badenoch. And I think in terms of the actual role of leader of the opposition, she's proved very ineffective. Mm. Quite frankly, she disappeared for the first few months in the role. She has started very badly at Prime Minister's questions. She seems to be largely absent from the media. And when she does do media rounds, she seems not to enjoy it at all. The shadow cabinet is stuffed full of yesterday's men and is largely inactive. And compared to this, Nigel Farage has essentially been given an open goal. And Reform's ability to flood the zone has been largely down to the fact the Conservative Party seems not to have the fight in it. The party of Peel, of Disraeli, of Baldwin, of Thatcher seems to be giving up the ghost. And as a young Conservative, I not only find that very sad, but it makes me bloody angry. And I wish Kemi Badenoch was a bit more bloody angry about it.
Well, I'm sure we'll play some Master Brew-esque media effect over that last bit there. Michael, your case for the defence of Kemi Badenoch.
Well, I feel William's pain. And I completely understand the anguish that lots of Conservatives feel about the position in which the party finds itself now. And I think that William is right to draw attention to the very difficult situation in which the party finds itself. But we first of all have to ask, would the situation be radically different under any other leader at the moment? What would be the means by which the Conservative Party, other than just being more energetic, could transform the political landscape? And here, I'm afraid I'm going to use the weight of experience in order to try to persuade William, in whom I see much of my younger self, to exercise just a little bit more strategic patience. So there have been moments in the past when the Conservative Party has been in even more difficult circumstances and even tougher straits. So when William Hague was leader, and of course, at the end of that, we didn't end up winning the election, but he laid some of the foundations for our eventual recovery. When William Hague was leader, the Labour Party was 40 points ahead. The dead parrot cover of The Sun was the most popular newspaper of the time, in a traditional Tory-supporting newspaper, essentially saying, you've had it. and Time to Go and the Conservative Party is facing extinction. We've also seen at other points in the past opposition parties, including Keir Starmer, only 1 year or just over 1 year into his leadership, losing the Hartlepool election, facing a potential coup from within. And yet, in both cases, the parties, even though there was yibbing at the time, recognised that the change of leader was not the answer to the deeper problems that they faced. And one of the things that made the Conservative Party seem frivolous and introspective and heedless of what the electorate were telling them in the past, certainly in the final years of government, was the endless leadership speculation and indeed leadership change, which made it seem as though the Conservative Party was more concerned with the fate of individual MPs holding their seats than actually articulating what was in the national interest. And in particular, if you look back to the final 2 years of government, and I am an unabashed admirer of Rishi Sunak as a politician and as a minister, the final 2 years of Conservative government were one attempt after another to find a sugar rush or a quick fix, a simple way out. And if you have a chronic problem, which the Conservative Party does, then that chronic problem will not be addressed by going back to what we've done in the past, which is to imagine that some sort of cannibalistic chief immolation will somehow be our salvation.
Johnson-esque echo there, perhaps, at the end, talking about Papua New Guinean-style cannibalism. Lara, any thoughts thus far?
I think the operative point here is the Conservative Party's problem is not its leader, it's its brand more generally. Mm. And the fact that sits with me is if the Tories replace Kemi before the end of the year, they're going to have had more leaders, or the same number of leaders in the past decade as they've had in the past half century before that. And there's two key issues with this. Voters hate it. We seem like an introspective, gossipy party. And secondly, it takes time to get used to settle with them, to sort of become accustomed to their strategy and mannerisms. And William talks about Kemi's like lack of appearance in the media round. But it's worth thinking about Keir Starmer's media, the same position in 2019-2020. Nobody cared what he had to say. He wasn't on the media, but there was a level of sort of grit and holding on that allowed him to then become relevant. And I think it's worth giving someone that time. And my final thought is the Conservative Party only have one chance to change leader before the next election if they want to. They can go into the net in 2029 with Kemi, or they can go in with someone else. And given that, why not take a bit longer to work out if Kemi is suffering because she won a poison chalice and whether she can overcome that, or whether we do need someone new. And there seems to me like quite a lot of good tests for the Conservatives coming up. We're probably going to have a by-election in North East Somerset. And it looks like, from news in recent days, we'll get one in Central Suffolk and North Ipswich. And those are two very interesting by-elections. The Tories didn't lose by that much in Somerset, and Central Suffolk is one of their safest seats. So I think watching and seeing what happens and how things develop is a much more sensible plan than leaning into the knee-jerk politics that have characterised the last decade in which voters really hate.
William, I mean, how much of the blame for the current state of the situation of the Conservative Party is to do with personal factors or failings of Kevin Bacon, not versus structural ones?
Well, I think there is obviously the structural challenge that the party has just suffered, you know, its worst general election defeat in its history. And there is the unprecedented structural challenge where you now have a challenger party on the right, which has shown it is capable of winning, you know, national elections in a sort of first-past-the-post system, not even, you know, with the sort of European elections in 2019. But I have to push back on both sort of Michael and Lara in suggesting that sort of more time is required to allow sort of Kemi to play out, because quite frankly, I don't think the party has the time. And I think Kemi Badenoch thought that she would come in and she would have 5 years and she could do her best Mrs. Thatcher impression, try and write her in stepping stone, set up her own version of the CPS, etc., as Mrs. T did after she became party leader in 1975. But we are not in 1975. Not only are we in a very different media environment of social media and GB News and all the rest, but we have this challenger party. And this challenger party is led by Nigel Farage, who's been in politics for 30 years, who is far more well-known than she is, and who has a credibility on the central sort of political issue, immigration, that she and her party lacks. And the question the Conservative Party has to ask itself, and which is especially pertinent after the local elections, is Kemi Badenoch the person to take on Nigel Farage? Is she the person who can get those voters back that we are currently leaking en masse to Reform? And I think if you look at a YouGov poll that came out in the last few days, it suggests that her favourability ratings with Reform voters are 58% unfavourable, 23% favourable. This is a disaster. And it's a disaster because it shows that sort of Farage is appealing to the sort of voters that the Conservative Party should naturally have held. You know, he is taking sort of people who have been loyal Conservatives all their lives. And I think, you know, one thing that both Lara, you and Mike were saying, which is that how the Conservative Party is perceived by the general public. I mean, the general public hate the Conservative Party. But, you know, as the sort of pollster and focus grouper, sort of James Frayne has pointed out, it has no instinctive loyalty to it. You know, Conservatives like to assume that, oh, well, we get knocked down and then we've got a few years, we get back in again. The public doesn't see it like that. The public has no institutional loyalty to the Conservative Party. And now we have a challenger party that is doing our job, you know, for us. If Kemi Badenoch is not the person to stop Nigel Farage, you then have to ask the question of, why would you leave her there?
Yeah.
You know, if your house is on fire, you don't wait a year before calling 999. You know, when does the crisis point dump? Does it come after we lose these two by-elections? Does it come after she has a dire party conference where we're fourth in the polls and nobody turns up and there's no sponsors and it's just filled with, you know, councillors who've just lost their seats complaining at her? Or do we do it after this electoral shacking that's coming next May? It strikes me the most obvious thing is when the party is in a tailspin, you look far more silly, you look far more stupid, and you look far more like you have a death wish by sticking with the hopeless leader rather than being too worried that having another, you know, leadership election will make you look more incompetent.
I mean, the key point, Michael, that critics like William would say is that, you know, it's not the party standing still, it's going backwards.
It's certainly the case that over the last couple of months, particularly because of the local elections and the focus that there's been on Farage's success, that the Conservative Party has not only had less media attention, but has also fallen in the polls. However, I do think that while elements of William's critique are absolutely spot on, they're about the party, not about the leader. He's correct that Farage has been in politics for 30 years. That's a proof that resilience over time and experience are important, and that you shouldn't make a premature judgment about any individual leader so early on in their leadership. He's correct also to say that the legacy that any Conservative leader would have had would be damning. But what he hasn't yet done is outline how a new leader could transform or assuage that record, or what a new leader would have in terms of experience or guile that would outmatch Farage. And three other things that I would say quickly. The first is that the Conservative Party doesn't have any of the major policy splits or differences that other parties have and that it's had in the past. The second is that Kemi Badenoch has an intellectual coherence that is rare in politics. I saw her in government, for example, in the way in which she dealt with the retained EU law bill, deal with an issue on which on one side there were zealots who wanted to essentially take a blowtorch to the statute book, and then civil service inertia, which didn't want us to do anything to take advantage of EU departure. And she was able not just to thread the needle, but to build a tapestry as a result of that as to how we should change things. But the final thing that I would say is that if the Conservative Party changed its leader because there was a fundamental change of approach, if the Conservative Party decided that its leader was no longer the appropriate person to prosecute the case in which it believed because that leader did not believe in that case, that would be one thing. People would say, this is about conviction. If the Conservative Party collectively says, hey, we're not going to hold our seats, so we're going to get rid of you for what are essentially transactional, self-interested reasons, then it would only confirm in the public mind the disdain that they've developed for the Conservative Party that both Lara and William have put forward. If the Conservative Party looks like a machine for the perpetuation of a clique in office, then that clique will never be returned to office. If the Conservative Party makes arguments for why conservatism, and not the mixta maxta of populist songs that Reform are ringing, proper conservatism is the answer to our problems, then it will survive and it will prevail. And I do think that basic conservative instincts about the size and scope of the state, epistemic modesty, respect for tradition. I know these are abstract nouns, but when you see them bodied forth in policy, That's where the British public, particularly where the English public, are.
I mean, the point for you, William, will be that the Conservatives need to appear competent, be the party of fiscal responsibility, need to look like they've got cool heads. And actually, at this point, we can argue about what went wrong for the past 14 years ad nauseam. But at this point, strategically, if they got rid of Cameron Badenoch, replaced it with someone else who presumably did a far less good case, you know, in terms of the two obvious ones would be James Cleverly or Robert Jemrick at winning over members of the Parliamentary Party last year. Jemrick lost by double-digit margin in terms of the membership vote, for instance. Why would they have the sort of authority, the gravitas, the kudos to lead the party and actually appeal to those voters to say, look, in office, we couldn't trust you with anything?
Well, I think, first of all, if one goes by that sort of gold standard metric of Tory member opinion, the Conholm members survey, over the last couple of months, it's become very clear that Kemi Badenoch's sort of figures with it have tanked, whereas Robert Jenrick's have soared. And in particular, I think there was a poll done a couple of months ago that showed if the leadership race was sort of run again, Jenrick would win. And especially because Conholm members backed sort of Kemi over Jenrick by a 60-40 margin, that suggests that, you know, if a future leadership race did go to the sort of membership, that sort of Jenrick would likely win it by a landslide. Look, I think Michael was talking about the importance of policy. And, you know, I agree. I think one of the ways that, you know, you would outflank reform is by, first of all, sort of showing that you have credibility on the issue of immigration. You can only do that by repudiating the record of the last 14 years. And secondly, it's by flooding the zone with a vision that is more credible than Farage's, which would be backed up not only by sort of big policy documents, which I imagine the vast majority of voters wouldn't read, but by a sort of coherent vision that sort of linked all this together and proved that you were a sort of sensible party of government again. But the thing is that Kemi Badenoch announced, well, relatively early on her leadership, that we're not going to have any policy till 2027, that we're not going to have a reshuffle until before the next general election. And already, you know, she's U-turned on that. Already she's trying to sort of pump out sort of policies on, you know, indefinite leave to remain. And there's also, as you know, wrote in your excellence column on Tinkerbell Tories this week, James, there is now sort of the looming realisation that a shadow cabinet reshuffle is required because, frankly, there are lots of sort of MPs in the shadow cabinet who are not up to the job and who haven't done anything. I mean, the most obvious ones being Mel Stride, who has been a complete absence the last sort of 6 months as shadow chancellor. Priti Patel, whose disastrous interview with Harry Cole a couple of months ago proved why it was always a mistake to let her be in the shadow cabinet. And I think Ed Argar at Health, who is a nice bloke, but has been entirely absent for the last 6 months. Quite frankly, it was ludicrous that for the reason that he had committed a crime by no longer backing her in this in the last leadership election, Neil O'Brien, who is, I think, the most sort of competent sort of policy wonk on the Tory benches, is outside of the shadow cabinet. And I think that sort of speaks to a problem with Kemi's leadership. You know, she has surrounded herself with loyalists. She is now hunkered down in the CCHQ Führer bunker, and she is unwilling to listen to sort of criticism. You know, I've known, because I've tried to put this to sort of members of her team, that they would much prefer to sting their fingers in the ears, pretend that they have the 5 years that they palpably lack, than actually try and adjust and sort of modify and learn. And quite frankly, you can't claim you're going to have a listening leadership if you're not going to listen to anyone.
Well, we've set fire to half the shadow cabinet. Michael, in terms of the response to that, I suppose it would be that Kemi Badenoch would have hopefully grown this role. Mm. Actually, as we've already talked about, she's gone backwards in the polling. She hasn't clearly adopted the right strategy on William's sort of metrics there laid out. Is she actually getting better at it? Because, of course, Keir Starmer notably did get better in his performances on the media in terms of party management. He was able to sack people. You know, he demonstrated a ruthlessness which you need to get the top job, yes, in British politics. Do you think Kemi's got it in her for all that?
I do. There are a few people in politics that I know who are tougher than Kemi and who are prepared to risk unpopularity than Kemi. On William's list of colleagues and former colleagues, I could take quite a lot of time to defend them. However, I'll make 2 points. So Rob Jenrick and James Cleverly, both people I really like. And Rob, I think, has been the standout star of the shadow cabinet. No doubt about that. But it's always the case that there will be, in any given government or opposition at any time, someone who is the preferred alternative, the best available girlfriend or boyfriend. And in this case, it's Rob. You know, and in the past, it was Heather to Maggie, or it was Boris to Theresa. And it's always the case that there will be someone unencumbered by the responsibilities of being the leader and naturally talented who will be the prince over the water. And in, you know, that's just a feature. If Rob were to become the next leader of the Conservative Party, then it would be the case that someone else Nick Timothy, Neil O'Brien, Katie Lamb, James Cleverly would be the person who would be in their shadow cabinet performing so well that people would say, well, you know, Rob is, you know, he's a great guy, very principled, highly effective. What about Katie Lamb? Katie's unencumbered and untarnished by her time in government. You know, we need Katie to be leader. So it becomes a perpetual search for the next hit. Two other things I would say. Firstly, one of the greatest Conservative leaders ever, Stanley Baldwin, shortly after he became leader, led the Conservatives into a disastrous election, which actually catapulted Labour into power for the first time. The Tories didn't panic at that time. They exercised strategic patience. He went on to dominate the latter 20s and 1930s. And of course, even when he was Prime Minister, he faced massive dissent from broadly the right. And you had Northcliffe and Rothermere, the press barons of that time, winning by-elections. By having candidates who were denouncing Baldwin for his drift and milksop tendencies and so on. So, again, we've seen variations of both this discontent and this search for, blue nirvana before. And then the final thing that I would say is it's not negligible in Kemi Badenoch's case to have been the first politician of cabinet level to take a decisive stand on an essential question: what is a woman, what is a man? And then, out of office, to have been vindicated and to have compelled the Prime Minister to change his position. And some of the other positions that she's taken on migration, on the economy, on net zero, are examples of areas where already the Overton window is shifting and she's been doing that moving. So, again, you can see the waves on the surface crashing against the Tory ship, but underneath, at a deeper oceanic level, the currents are moving in a different direction, and they're moving in a direction which is conservative.
I'm going to come to Lara now, and then I'm going to ask first William and then Michael to start their arguments for returning to the final word for everybody to Lara. So your thoughts on this far?
Of course. I don't entirely agree with William's analysis of the shadow cabinet. I do think Neil O'Brien should be in it, and I will accept that there are a small number of excellent shadow cabinet ministers who are probably carrying the weight of the team. That seems like a party problem, talent problem, that needs fixing over the next few years. It doesn't seem like a leader problem, and I'm interested in how you think it necessarily is one. My second thought, I think a lot of Conservative strategists have a blind spot when it comes to the Lib Dems. The Conservatives are definitely bleeding voters to reform. That is probably their key crisis point. But I don't think that they could win another election without resolving their Lib Dem problem as well. They have lost a lot of very old voters to the Lib Dems, the professionals, the middle classes, people that have been with them for much longer than the sort of 2019 shaky coalition. And if you look at the Lib Dems, the Lib Dems are run by an extremely vacuous leader who's made no major speeches, focused entirely on basically one issue, and as far as I can tell, has spent the last year in a centre parks. So if this is all about the leader and the leader's charisma and the leader's speeches and media, why on earth are Tory heartland voters now going to Ed Davies' party? And my final point, I think, for both of you is I need to hear a positive case for why throwing Kemi out and entering a months-long leadership contest, which is covered as squabbling and cliquiness by the media, and then emerging with James Cleverly, Robert Jenrick, or maybe Jeremy Hunt, if you sort of throw a wildcard in, changes the Tories' fortunes right now, when nobody's listening to us, when reform are very exciting and interesting and they have more money. I think that would be my sort of key question.
I defer to Michael and the author of, Michael Patillo, The Future of the Right, on the vexed question of Tory princes across the water and whether there should be a sort of Robert Jenrick sort of style update. So perhaps is a question I should discuss with a few publishers. But I mean, first of all, on the Lib Dem question, Lara, Onward have done the polling on this. The number one reason why sort of voters went from the Tories to the Lib Dems at the last election was immigration. And immigration is, as I say, the central sort of political issue of our time. And so the Conservative Party's inability to get any credibility of this issue would suggest that you would need a leader who is able to sort of have some credibility on this issue. The only person in the Conservative Party who has any credibility on this issue is Robert Jenrick, because he was the only person, you know, to resign from the cabinet on this issue, who is now a potential sort of leadership contender. And, you know, to sum up, The Conservative Party is facing an existential crisis. In the last 6 months, we have gone from the worst general election defeat in our history to being third in the polls and heading towards fourth, if a couple of surveys this last week are to be believed. The leader of the Conservative Party doesn't seem to regard this as a crisis. Indeed, over the last couple of weeks, she's gone around on the media, occasionally turning up to do her sort of chemical alley routine, where she tells us that nothing's really wrong, it's sad that we lost a few councillors, but everything will be fine once we've had a few reviews. And quite frankly, she doesn't realise that the Conservative Party is at death's door. And I do not want the Conservative Party to go into the next set of elections next year and have a result that's even worse than the one that we've just seen. And I think with Kemi Badenoch as leader, there is not going to be the ability to sort of take on to Nigel Farage. There is not going to be the ability to try and flood the zone and prove to voters that the Conservative Party is having a reckoning with its record in 14 years in government, understands why they're so angry, understands why we're hated, and become a viable political force again. Leaving the Conservative Party under the leadership of Kemi Badenoch, I think, shows that the party is quite frankly being consciously embracing its own suicide. And it might be embarrassing to have yet another leadership election. It might be embarrassing to have, you know, yet more appearances by the chair of the 1922 committee on our screens. But I would rather have that and the Conservative Party have a very sort of narrow chance of surviving, you know, the next year than allowing those 300 years of history to sort of disappear under Kemi's leadership.
Well, it's a cliche, but the fate of politicians sometimes is compared to that of football managers. But the reason it's a cliche, like most cliches, is that it has an element of enduring truth. Those football teams that do best are those that stick with managers through thick and thin. Whether it's Alex Ferguson or Arsene Wenger, a long duration accorded to a manager is a precondition for recovery and then for preeminence. Second thing that I would say is, what are the essential qualities that you need in a political leader? You need intellect. Kemi Badenoch has that. You need courage. She's displayed that. You need principle. That is something that everyone associates with Kemi, and those who've worked with her know, runs through her whole character. Here she stands, she can do no other, on a range of issues. Now, could she inspire the team around her more, or at the very least, get more out of them? Yes, I think there is a question about the degree of support that she's being given and the degree that she elicits from others. But I think that it's a mark of a leader and a mark of a party that it can acknowledge the strengths and then tackle the weaknesses in its offer overall. And fundamentally, it's only if the Conservative Party has clearer arguments, not just detailed policy propositions, but clearer arguments from the heart about the sort of country that we want to be, about what it is that we need to do in order to change our economy so that the next generation actually has a stake in our future, what a rational migration policy would be that combines compassion with an effective moratorium on numbers. And only if we have an understanding of what public service reform should entail in order to make sure that the NHS is sustainable in the future and that we can improve schools. Now, in all of those areas, as Laura mentions, the Lib Dems have got almost nothing to say and reform are directly contradictory. Now, it may be that I, as a politician, as a journalist, and as a human being, overestimate the importance of coherence, policy, and ideas. And it may be that we're entering a world where images, memes, and vibes prevail. If so, that is not a conservative world. But I will continue to fight for and to support people who believe in conservative values, because I believe that a world of vibes is inferior to a world of principles.
And to sum up, Laura, your thoughts?
The question of whether Kemi is the right person to take the Conservatives into the 29 or 28 general election is an open one. I think it is worth accepting that most people don't view the last 6 or so months as the best possible start. It was a very challenging gig, but that doesn't mean there haven't been major mistakes. The small things like announcing quite a coherent net zero policy on the same day as Labour's welfare reforms were major comms errors that they need to learn not to do. I think that being said, if the Conservatives are going to offer anything distinct from Reform, there's no point going Reform like light. And if they're ever going to bring back professional voters that have seen them through an electoral coalition for 300 years, they need to abandon extremely knee-jerk insular policies. They do need to do that boring review work. They need to work out why the entire Shadow Cabinet is not working cohesively and why we're seeing so much from a minority of figures. And they need to give this a bit of time. And I think before Kemi has done a year, to get rid of her would be to have another Liz Truss moment. And it would be to hand Keir Starmer a stick with which to beat them at every PMQs for the next 3-4 years. And that doesn't seem sensible right now.
Well, I'm sure one way you can keep up with the debate will be here on Coffee Hour Shots. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Lara. Thank you, William. And thank you for listening to today's edition.